Hello, my name is Philip Miritin, and today we are going to have a conversation beyond science and religion.
Breaking new ground in thinking, exploring the outer limits of what we know about the world and ourselves, unhindered by common beliefs and perceptions. This is Conversations Beyond Science and Religion, taking on subjects from the Big Bang, the multiverse, and evolution to the supernatural and the new rising consciousness. This is where scientists, philosophers, New Agers, and spiritualists come together to discuss where this world may be heading. Now, here's your host, lawyer, philosopher, and the author of The Heaven at the End of Science, Philip Miritin.
Now, the purpose of this show is to explore the outer limits of what we know about the world and ourselves, to explore uncharted territory. Now, many people who have been tracking the progress of man's understanding of himself have reached a conclusion that this world is heading towards a paradigm shift, a worldview revolution, a new way of thinking that unites science and spirituality. And let me put this in more basic terms. Now, many of us believe that we are getting close to the point where the thought leaders, which is to say modern science's most esteemed thinkers, will change their mind about the nature of the world we live in. Or, as Max Planck observed in the 19th century, perhaps we have to wait for a new generation of scientists to come on board. But one way or the other, there is a paradigm shift on the horizon, and that's what this show is going to be about. So, as this approach goes, if the thought leaders change their mind, then maybe we will have a trickle-down effect. Textbooks will need to be rewritten, curriculums changed, standards for issuing prizes and awards, admissions, degrees will also change, and the media will change. The media's presentation of modern science, modern materialistic science, and this new spirituality movement will change. How long this will take is anyone's guess. Now, the reason why a change is in order, and the reason why I'm even talking about this topic, is because there's certain features of our current worldview that are in direct contradiction with each other. And most particularly, we have a conflict between the independent materialistic worldview of modern science and what we know as quantum theory. This is an important and serious contradiction because quantum theory is, in fact, the leading theory of physical reality. So we have modern science in a conundrum. Modern science is based upon an independent world of matter, but their own theory of physical reality says that no such independent world exists. And so we're going to be exploring this topic today with one of the leaders in this whole movement, who I'm very happy to have on the show. His name is Dr. Amit Goswami. Now, Dr. Goswami is a former professor of physics at the University of Oregon. He is a pioneer in the quest to use the principles of quantum theory to form a new worldview based upon the preeminence of mind over matter. He calls the new paradigm science within consciousness, an idea he set forth in his seminal book, The Self-Aware Universe, where he gives a solution to the quantum measurement problem and elucidates the famous observer effect. Let me add, before I continue with my introduction, that we're going to try to be clarifying these terms throughout this interview, and next week as well when we do part two. Now, Dr. Goswami has written six other popular books, at least, based upon his research concerning quantum physics and consciousness, including The Quantum Doctor, God is Not Dead, and Creative Evolution. His books have been translated into 15 languages, and he is featured in the last few editions of the Australian magazine Veritas. He's also been featured in the films What the Bleep Do We Know, Down the Rabbit Hole, The Dalai Lama Renaissance, and the award-winning biographic documentary The Quantum Activist. Now, his latest book is How Quantum Activism Can Save Civilization. Now, I happen to think that the way to change the world is to change the way people think about the world. And to do that, we need an argument, and I want to add here that we may need more than an argument. We may need experiments. We're going to probably need some proof, some data, but we're lucky to have people like Dr. Goswami around who has dealt with these issues in such depth and offers really a enlightening and uplifting view of the modern world that is in direct contradiction to some of the principles of modern science. Now, Dr. Goswami Thank you very much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you here.
I'm delighted, Philip.
Now, first of all, you're an advocate of changing our worldview. And why do you think we need to change it?
Well, it's pretty obvious, and you said it very well, I think. But besides what you said, that there are contradictions within the science itself, it is important to see that we have applied this science, this materialist science, scientific materialism, the idea that everything is matter, material interaction, space and time, these are everything. If we have followed this for the last 60 years, and look at what we have got. We have gotten crisis conditions that we cannot solve, staying within this philosophy. Everybody knows that our economy just is not working. It's not going to work because scientific materialism has changed the very core of how capitalism was envisioned. Capitalism requires the participation of consciousness. Similarly, democracy requires us to be aware, not machines. Liberal education is supposed to liberate us from dogmas, whereas this idea of scientific materialism itself is a dogma. It was supposed to free us from dogmas of the old religions, popular Christianity, but it has not done it in a dogma-free way. So we are now totally polarized in this society, Democrats and Republicans, religionists who like values correctly, of course. I think that we need values for civilization. The materialists deny values because values cannot be incorporated within the materialist thinking. Matter cannot process values. It's as simple as that. So what have we got? Valueless aspects of reality, which the materialists support. And, of course, reality consists of us human beings who need values to live. So religions support that. But religions have some archaic dogmatic part. So does this materialist science, some archaic dogmatic part. Fortunate thing is that we can today integrate both views. We can have a view, the quantum view of reality, science within consciousness, with primacy of consciousness, in which both the religious values, spiritual values, and what scientific materialism's gift to us is technologies that really have uplifted our life from lots of misery in the past to fairly comfortable living, at least in the economically advanced countries. Both of these can be preserved with new understanding so that we can do it better. This is the reason that we need the worldview change, and it will happen.
Yeah. Now I agree with where you're going with this, and I want to make something clear that to the listener that in many ways, when we look at sort of the thought leaders or the thoughts or the belief systems of our modern world, we tend to put them into categories. We tend to put science in one category, one book on the shelf. And then we put religion on another book on the shelf. And we tend to think that it's either or. Either you go to church or synagogue and you pray to something or to somebody or to some transcendent being, or you're a logical scientist. And I think what you're saying, if I'm reading you correctly, Dr. Goswami, is that we have to go beyond that dichotomy. Right.
Yes.
We have to transcend that, and that's really what we're talking about. And I think that too many times people like you and me and others in this field, we might be labeled creationists or something else, because, well, you're either a scientist and you believe in materialism, or therefore you must be a creationist. And so why don't you speak? I mean, and it's very important to understand that we're not talking about sort of coming up with another argument here to justify organized religion, right?
We are not talking about justifying organized religion. It is very sad reflection on the society today, especially the media. When anyone who talks, for example, how to get a correct theory of evolution that explains human beings in its full extent, beyond Darwinism. One has to go beyond Darwinism. But as soon as you have said that, immediately the media will jump at you. Not even the biologists have to do anything. The media will jump at you that you are being a creationist. So it's just a very strange state of affairs where it is very hard to get, except for people like yourself who are fighting this, I'm sure, you know, within the media community. But the mainstream media, indeed, is quote-unquote liberal, and that liberal means followers of scientific materialism. Make no mistake about it. And this is why we have created Fox News.
Yeah.
Fox News obviously is grossly anti-fact, but so is liberal media. They are grossly anti-fact because they are not seeing the inner contradictions of scientific materialism, and they are not looking for alternative solutions that many of us, I mean, this is the tragedy. You know, 5
right.
million people viewed What the Bleep Do We Know.
Yeah. Now let's define our terms a little bit, because I think most people have heard the term materialism, and I think the common interpretation of materialism is somebody that is quote unquote materialistic, or somebody that only believes in material things, or put differently, gadgets, money, big cars, big houses. Now that's perhaps true, but I think that we need to talk about really the foundation of materialism. And so we have a contrast that we can make with quantum theory. So why don't you describe sort of what the materialistic worldview is in your mind?
Right. You were very right to start here. So we distinguish materialism and scientific materialism, but it's just a matter of detail. The materialism follows from scientific materialism.
Right.
Scientific materialism is the idea that everything that science deals with, every object, is a material object and material interactions. So this primacy of matter is everything, everything meaning everything, everything meaning our consciousness, our mind, our values, our creativity, everything is due to material interactions, which means that we don't have any creativity at all. And materialists talk about it glibly, but it's
right.
sophistry.
Right.
It all comes from elementary particles of matter. Elementary particles make atoms. Atoms make molecules. Molecules make the genes and the neurons and eventually the brain. And everything that we experience is just brain phenomenon. They don't have any substantiality other than what is in the brain. So, and ultimately the elementary particles. So
right.
this has to be understood clearly, and it never is explained in the media because it requires explanation. Scientific materialism, when explained this way, everybody can see that cannot be the answer to what humanity is all about. We have freedom. Otherwise, how can we take responsibility for how we act? How can we build civilization with values that come from, supposedly, from elementary particles and genes? Even materialists agree that genes don't have any other value than survival values. So is it all survival? Then what kind of society do we build? We build a very competitive society where everybody fights with everybody else. Is that the basis of civilization? Can that be a basis of civilization? And without creativity, where would we be? Are we denying Einsteins and Newtons and Buddhas and Jesus who build our civilization? So this is the thing, that if you look at it with any kind of proper attitude, that we must value our own civilizations, then scientific materialism is obviously an incomplete science, incomplete
right.
view, incomplete worldview. It has to be completed. And obviously also it is a dogma. Dogma is what? Dogma is a exclusive worldview. You exclude some things. What are we excluding? We are excluding all our internal experiences like consciousness, free will, creativity, mind, values. And this is a dogma. Just as religions, because they exclude matter and matter's material aspects of the world to a substantial extent, they are also a dogma. They have specific pictures of God and the spiritual world. That is also a dogma. But you cannot fight dogma with dogma. Dogma is exclusive. We need, when we deal with human beings, we need to be as inclusive as our current knowledge permits. And fortunately, the current knowledge is permitting a whole inclusive worldview. We don't require any dogma anymore. This new worldview that is coming based on quantum physics is a dogma-free worldview. And this is where its strength is.
Yeah, and I think that, that's very well put. And I want to emphasize two points you made. First, the concept of scientific materialism, which I also think is philosophical materialism. I mean, I have a philosophy background, so I view it as sort of a Karl Marx or Hobbes materialistic worldview, where matter is all that exists. This matter is independent of consciousness or mind. There is no meaning in the world, because if everything is matter, then matter itself is just dumb and blind. You can't search for purpose in a rock. And when you view the world in those terms, in my mind, you essentially alienate yourself. I think it creates alienation between the human being and the world, because now you've separated yourself and you treat the world as a foreign object. Now that's a general statement, but I think when you get into things like environmentalism and also what you do, and also peace between religions or the relationship between different religions, you see that if you treat the other and the external world as an alien creation, then it tends to lead towards conflict, lack of respect, lack of attention, and so if you invert the picture and you look at consciousness being or mind being primary, now you see that we're living in a world that I personally believe is coming from us, and therefore you should respect it, because you're essentially respecting yourself.
You're expecting, very well put. You know, beautifully put.
You know, you're essentially respecting yourself. Now, the other thing that I want to emphasize here is that's bothersome to me, is that I read a lot of science books, and virtually every science book starts off with a story or a recitation of how great science is, and one of the principles is that it's the open-minded search for truth. And, for example, that is in one of Ernest Mayr's, the late Harvard biologist, books, you know, but it's everywhere. Science is self-critical. It's open-minded. It's objective. But all these principles, it seems to me, get thrown by the wayside when they start talking about materialism. This is what I don't understand. I mean, you're exactly right. That it's a dogma of materialism, but we're talking about some hypocrisy. I mean, I guess I will use the H word, the hypocrisy word, because I don't understand how you can be open-minded and how you could proclaim that you're in an open-minded pursuit of truth when you don't open your mind to other ways of viewing the data.
Yeah, not only that, but the basic problem is that it becomes a whole bunch of sophistry. You see, the scientific materialism is obviously an incomplete philosophy. You put it in terms of alienation, but it's pretty obvious. You know, I have these debates with scientists all the time, and it's not consistent with their own behavior. Like, according to the scientific materialists, everybody is a zombie, a machine.
Right.
But a Harvard person or a professor or any person don't behave like they're a machine. They take themselves very seriously.
Yep.
If we were machines and realized it, then of course we would just go along with our affair and bother, not bother. But human being is there to bother. And the reason we bother is that we intuit that we have freedom, we choose, we have to take responsibility, and this is why we bother. So, you know, the sophistry is stopping us. To take your Harvard professor, take the concept of truth. Elementary particles, having any idea of what truth is? Truth is an archetype, a value that we have. Truth is not included in scientific materialism. And this is why Fox News exists, and this is why talking about truth is borderline hypocrisy. because it's not included in scientific materialism. Material interactions between elementary particles cannot tell us anything about truth. It does not require any mention of any truth, any meaning whatsoever. And it's just, as your Harvard professor said, it's just objective.
Right.
You cannot be objective that way.
Right.
You have to find objective in different ways than what material objectivity can do. Can we be objective and include value? Can we be objective and include meaning? Yes, we can. But you have to do it by inclusively including meaning and value in your worldview. So what we do in quantum physics is really revolutionary. We find that objects that we thought were concrete objects following Newtonian deterministic laws are not really objects following deterministic laws, but they are possibilities for consciousness to choose from. As soon as you have realized that material objects are possibilities, we can immediately realize that, well, mental objects of meaning, objects of archetypal objects of value, they can also be possibilities for consciousness to choose from, and they can coexist, all of them, material, vital, mental, supramental values, they all can exist as possibilities of consciousness within this totality, this ground of being that we call consciousness. You know, so religious people used to call it God,
right,
or Godhead. But that is the new worldview. If we include all these other things, then we can talk about truth. Otherwise, there is no such thing as truth in a scientific materialist worldview. And this is the point that is missed, and this is the point that causes confusion, and this is why respect as a word has disappeared today from the world of discourse, because people use sophistry to justify what they're saying, but they don't mean anything.
Yeah.
Scientific materialist to talk about truth is total sophistry.
And I think that it's important here as well to sort of look at the big picture, and we can make some observations. First of all, if you are a pure materialist, atheism almost follows by logical necessity. And
absolutely.
I think that is really the story of Richard Dawkins and Daniel Dennett and Lawrence Krauss and Stephen Hawking.
Yeah.
And all those guys. I mean, because if you're consistent with that way of thinking, then you are an atheist. Now, that's because there's no room for spirit in a material world, right? So number two. However, if you look at the American public, and you could branch out to Europe and Australia, something like 60-80% of people believe in either God or a higher form of being. Okay, so then you look at the paranormal. Something like 50-70% of people have had some kind of paranormal experience. So we have science teaching materialism, which in its pure form, you have to be an atheist, to people that are not atheists. and so to me, that splinters the modern mind. We have this conflict within us where we know, and I happen to think, Doctor, that most people know in their heart that materialism cannot be right.
Right. Most people, including the Harvard and the Princeton professors,
right,
who prefer scientific materialism.
Right.
This is the tragedy. Of course, you know, I mean, the position that they are taking comes from a good place, but it comes from a combative place. A good
right.
place because it started 400 years ago with a very legitimate complaint about the religious dogmas that those people suffered in those days.
Right.
But those days are long gone.
Right.
This is what these scientists like Dawkins and Hawking doesn't forget.
Right. Right. And this new worldview, which we have to now, I think, switch a little bit. I think we defined materialism as this worldview where it is assumed that there is a world independent of consciousness that exists on its own power, that is definable, and that at its space consists of little particles. I call it the ball bearing universe. I mean that's one description. But yeah. you've done a great job in this in your books that quantum theory destroys the foundation of materialism. Yes, why don't you describe, because we're not talking, and then this is a very important point here. We have a lot of writers in the New Age realm genre that look at quantum theory. They look at some of the hallmarks or features of the materialistic worldview, and then they sort of leap to a spiritualistic mindset. What I would call more of a touchy-feely kind of, under quantum theory, we all have to be nice to each other or something. And there's nothing wrong with that, okay? But what we're talking about, I think what you're talking about, is something more methodical, right?
Yes, they miss a major step. Right. The major step is that they don't make the internal experiences valid first. Right. They jump directly from matter into consciousness. And the building block is what they miss. If the building block you leave as matter, then we cannot get meaning and value and feelings out of it. Right. You have to put them in first.
Right.
This is what I call a philosophy that is sometimes traditionally called psychophysical parallelism. That has existed with us actually for a couple of centuries, three centuries, but that has never been appreciated very much. In quantum physics, we make it paradox-free.
Right.
All these philosophies that were variously called dualism, quantum physics has brought them back in with complete philosophical consistency by a new concept, a new experimentally verified concept, that is of quantum non-locality. This idea of paranormal that you are talking about several times, paranormal exists because of this quantum non-locality. It's a concept concept on the basis of signal-less communication. In scientific materialism, interactions are material interactions. They always require communication through signals. So if that were the reality, then of course we could not have paranormal. Not only we could not have paranormal, we could not have our psyche at all, mind, all these things. Could be justified not to exist because how does mind and matter interact? This has been the bugaboo of philosophical thinking in the past because scientists would say that that's dualism.
Right.
How does a dual body interact with material body?
Right.
But
right.
Now with the concept of non-locality, you see, you have solved the problem. They don't interact directly. They interact through a non-local interconnectedness. And that is consciousness. Consciousness as the ground of being acts as a non-local interconnectedness and enables mind and matter to interact without signals. So there is no philosophical inconsistency anymore that we don't find these signals. We don't find these signals because these signals don't have to be postulated. These signals don't exist. They don't need to.
Okay.
And the verification of that is in the paranormal. And the verification of that is also within scientific experiment. Fully material level experiments have now verified the existence of quantum non-locality. So there is no doubt that our new paradigm is solidly established on experimental ground.
Yeah, now let's back up a minute here because there are at least two core features of quantum theory that are key to your worldview, to your paradigm shift. And the first one is what quantum theory tells us about the makeup of the physical world. Okay.
And then matter itself.
Right. And the second one would be the non-locality.
Non-locality and the existence of the subtle world.
Existence
of the subtle, the mental, the vital, and the supramental, this is the part that the New Age writers miss.
Yeah.
They miss not their own fault, but because except for myself and Casey Blood, a Rutgers physicist who is also retired like me, except for us, very few scientists have gone into that. And the reason is that most of us who are doing this new paradigm stuff are physicists.
Yeah.
And physicists tend to carry this prejudice that there is nothing but matter very deep in their minds. It is so deep that is probably this prejudice that there is no independent mind or independent supramental value body world, or our feelings mean something and consist of an independent vital world. These are the prejudices that are proving to be even more difficult to eradicate than the prejudice against consciousness itself.
Yeah.
I think even David Brooks, you know, New York Science columnist who is sort of borderline Republican, even he wrote in a column beautifully that I have heard that quantum physics tells us new things about consciousness that are very elucidating, something of that sort, I'm paraphrasing.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, that's tremendous breakthrough. A Republican columnist writing about quantum physics and how it contributes to our understanding of consciousness. So that has happened. But what has not happened is that the realization that indeed this new worldview also solves the so-called philosophical mind-body problem, that mind and body both could be independent worlds without consisting of dualism, this idea
right.
that they have to interact with some sort of signals and we don't see those signals. We don't see those signals because they interact through non-locality, not through signals.
Right,
this
right.
has to go through the popular mind.
Right, and I think that what we have is a number of logical fallacies at work. And one logical fallacy is called appeal to authority. And now appeal to authority is when the logical basis of your proposition is infirm, but you cite to somebody that's well known, and therefore it's you get credibility for citing to someone that's well known, even though the theory itself is highly suspect. Now we have something going on here that is important, I think, for a listener to understand, and that is that Albert Einstein held the belief that there was a real independent world outside of human perception. And he was the one that tried to disprove a lot of the findings of quantum physics. And it turns out that he lost that debate, right? He lost the debate.
He did not win
the debate. But
no.
if you look at the modern science writers, they're mimicking Einstein's belief. And I have, myself, in my own book, The Heaven at the End of Science, I have a couple quotes from Ernest Myers, one of them, George Gaylord Simpson's another one, and even Lee Smolin, who wrote his very good book on string theory, The Trouble with Physics, even Dr. Smolin says that science needs there to be an independent world to practice this discipline of science. And so I think that this is, to me, Doctor, this is a big problem, because there's sort of like this, they have this death grip on this independent world assumption.
But the point is that from the beginning, Heisenberg, I mean,
right.
Heisenberg, nobody can deny, is absolutely one of the greatest physicists that the entire world has known in a long time. Heisenberg is co-discoverer of quantum physics. He already, even in the beginning days of quantum physics, talked about quantum possibilities residing in transcendent potentia outside
right.
of space and time. So he already had this concept. And you mentioned Einstein. Without this independent world, where values come from, scientific laws come from, we really cannot talk about laws. And every scientist knows that. I mean, you know, people try to get laws out of the material movement, out of the completely random movement of matter, elementary particles. But such theories have never been proven to be of any substantiality. So the whole point is very, very well taken, that these scientists constantly talk about sophistry, inconsistent ideas to justify what they try to justify. If we become consistent, then everything becomes simple. I mean, if scientists follow their own rule, that let's be logical here.
Right.
This is why quantum paradoxes are so important to point out repeatedly, and extremely important for everybody to recognize that, look, scientific materialism is doomed because it cannot solve the so-called quantum measurement paradox, how quantum possibilities become actual events of experience whenever an observer looks.
Yeah, okay, now let's try to explain this principle, the quantum measurement problem, in the most basic terms we can. Now, and I want to say that on a past show we had Bruce Rosenblum, who wrote co-wrote the book Quantum Enigma, which has a very clear explication in there, and you've done it a number of times in your books. But why don't you describe the quantum measurement problem?
I'll be happy to. So the idea is that the reductionist explanation of the world, I already told you. So, right. We start with elementary particles. Elementary particles make atoms. Atoms make molecules. Molecule makes cells. Cells make brain. Brain makes consciousness. So let's look at the quantum world with this idea. And consciousness looks. We, human observer, we look consciously. We look with awareness, subjects separate from objects. We are not identifying with the electrons. As right. you said, we become separate. We are here. We are separate from the objects that we see. That is our experience. So let's look at it from the quantum point of view. Possible elementary particles making possible atoms, making possible molecules, making possible cells, making possible brain, making a possible consciousness. How can possible consciousness interacting with possible elementary particles, possible electrons, give you anything actual? But whenever an experimenter looks, this is fact.
Yeah.
Whenever anybody looks, an experimenter looks, experimenter finds actual electron in an actual place, not electrons distributed all over the room. Electrons never show up distributed all over the room, a smeared wave. It just doesn't show up like that. It has to be interpreted as a wave of possibility. It does act like a wave that has potential possibilities for appearing in every place, but it doesn't. In actual experiment, it appears always in one place. So the interpretation has to be that it is a wave of possibility in our experiments, in our act of observation. Some kind of choice happens from these possibilities, and the electron wave collapses to an actual position. This is called the quantum measurement problem or the observer effect. In the presence of an observer, we always find the possibilities to collapse to an actuality, never possibilities by themselves. So we have to assume a two-level reality, that there is this unmanifest realm of possibilities, which is also unconscious, and then there is the manifest realm of actuality, of which we are conscious, in which we are looking at them as a subject separate from the object. So unless this is allowed, unless this is completely brought into our worldview explicitly, we can never approach reality in its fullness. We can approach part of reality, and that's what scientific materialism does. It's an incomplete science. Just as religions look at part of the reality, that is the other half, the heaven part of reality, the values.
Right.
And they are completely right. When we integrate, which we can with now using the quantum ideas, then we get the best of both worldviews, and that is what we need to do.
Right. And I think that what is so important here is to understand that under quantum theory, consciousness is inextricably linked to what we call the physical world. And so those who want to separate the physical world completely from consciousness for modeling purposes are wrong if they want that model to actually mimic reality.
Right. Yeah, it's very important to point out that they're not following logic, which has to be our only way to follow things.
Right.
It gets paradoxes if you think otherwise. If you have to think logically, then you have to say this, that consciousness is the ground of being and matter exists as possibilities of this consciousness. And that is why everything is okay and logical. Why? Because if matter is choosing from its own possibilities, it does not require an interaction. No dualism is needed. This is what we call non-locality, signal-less communication. But that can happen only if matter is part of consciousness, not the other way around. In other words, brain does not make consciousness. Instead, consciousness makes the brain. Consciousness makes matter by collapsing material possibilities, which is its own possibilities, into actual events of conscious experience. If you understand things this way, everything falls together. Henry Stapp, another physicist who has done things this way, I already mentioned Casey Blatt, myself, Ferrara and Wolf looks at things very similarly. There are many scientists now who recognize the power of this thinking. So I'm not alone in this. This is very important to recognize. And the other thing very important to recognize is that if you look at things logically, von Neumann, a great mathematician, himself proved a mathematical theorem that material interactions can never convert possibility into actuality. And this itself shows you the absolute inviolable nature of this quantum measurement paradox if you hold on to the philosophy of scientific materialism. So scientific materialism is dead on this score alone. And yeah. There is, of course, another very famous score, which I must mention, I'm stopping you, which is the quantum non-locality. Quantum non-locality is not allowed in scientific materialism. Quantum non-locality is not explainable with scientific materialism, where everything has to occur with the help of signals. That quantum non-locality has been proven experimentally by quantum physicists themselves, famous Alan Aspey experiment. So that experiment, plus together with quantum measurement problem, completely, forever, has denigrated scientific materialism as an improbable, implausible philosophy as our worldview. It just cannot be that way.
Yeah, I mean, the way I look at it is that scientific materialism is really, it's also known in philosophy as naive realism or realism, I mean, if you go to the introduction of philosophy, and in fact, I still have my first book from philosophy. It's called The Introduction to Philosophy. It talks about naive realism, and naive realism is the view that we assume that the world we see is independent of what we are. And it really is a model, and that's what's important to understand. And in fact, to give Stephen Hawking some credit, in his newest book that he wrote with Leonard Mlodinow, he says that all science does is form models of reality. Okay, but then at the same time he says that, he also almost he circles the wagons around his materialistic model as being the final truth. But if we view the independent world theory as a model, and you sort of work with the model and see how far it takes you, you know better than anybody probably that in the 1920s and when all those quantum theory measurements, the two-slit experiment and all that came up, that model was proven to be wrong, and so now we're sort of developing a new model, and that's the way I like to look at it, because when we use fancy terms like revolutions or paradigm shifts, to me we're really talking about changing our mind or changing our model. We're looking at things in a different way.
Philip, there is one very fortunate thing that happened in the West. In fact, even a few years ago, I would say that, yes, this is what we are doing. We are just changing one model to a better model. But you know what? Something very funny, something very amazing has happened on the way that we didn't even see before. We had a conference a couple of years ago at Columbia University, thanks to a professor there named Lisa Miller. This was a conference on post-materialist ideas. I was invited to give a talk. And just around that time, this idea came to me, which I had not seen before. It's amazing that I had not seen it before. And this is the idea that, look, you know, on first face of it, science within consciousness sounds like just another model of reality, maybe a little better model, does not have paradoxes, but it's just a model. But it really isn't just that. When you base your reality as consciousness itself, then you don't have a model anymore. You really have an inclusive, everything inclusive picture of reality, because consciousness is where everything happens. It's completely consistent. Everything that happens is happens within our consciousness. We have nothing to contradict this idea. No experience can ever contradict this idea. Everything that happens happens within our consciousness. And when you realize that, then you realize that if consciousness is projected to be the ground of all being, then for the first time in human history, you are making up a science, you are building a science which is completely inclusive, because it includes, as Abraham Maslow said, science should include everything that is the case. Everything that is the case, everything that we experience. And so when you start with an inclusive model, you really never have to worry that you are being dogmatic. You have to be open, because what you say, my theory has to include you too. You see the beauty of it? So all polarizations can be resolved. We can be respectful of each other. There is no need to alienate anything, because everything got to be a phenomenon of consciousness, because we cannot go beyond our conscious phenomena to make up things, because everything that we can make up is also part of consciousness. You see the beauty of it?
Yeah, well, I agree, and I also, I mean, to me, truth, there is a truth, and there is a and there is a correct theory, and there is a correct model, and if I would agree with you that, and my use of the word model would be, there is a true model, and there is a right, and there is a final explanation that encompasses all of human experience, and maybe model does imply something independent of the truth.
Model means the representation of truth. But what I'm saying is that now we have made a representation which always has a semblance of truth, and then it all depends on how far we want to go with our semblance. How much do you want to include? Because we still will have the tendency occasionally not to include everything.
Yes.
So it only depends on our paucity of our approach. How daring are we? Are we going to include, for example, evil, which religions don't want to include?
Right.
You know, that kind of thing.
Right. 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 And one of the signs to me, I mean, I would agree, it's an obvious sign that the materialistic model is wrong, is because it rules out 80% of human experience.
Exactly.
It's like a marketing method, where, like, the theory of everything, I think, is a real good one. People, a theory of everything. A theory of everything that only includes about 5% of experience.
Right.
I mean how can you call it how can you call it a theory of everything when the paranormal's gone? Religion is gone, spirituality is gone, consciousness is gone.
Creativity is gone, the basis of our society, basis of our civilization.
Yeah, but it's a theory of everything, though, and so, therefore, it's just amazing to me, and it really is, it really is marketing. And so those of us in this other mindset, or those of us who are promoting a change in worldviews, paradigms, what it tells us is that we have to be better marketers. I mean, which is another mystery. But I want to focus a little bit on, I think, a front burner issue, because when you go from a ball bearing worldview, or a little particle worldview, which is sort of easy to imagine in our head, you think about these condensed little particles, the plum pudding model or whatever, to what quantum theory tells us is really out there. Okay, what is really out there in your thinking? I mean, what is this stuff?
First of all, we have to be a little careful about language.
Okay.
As soon as you have said out there, immediately we are making a separation. in the consciousness philosophy that we are adopting, and science has to adapt to that, otherwise quantum measurement paradox is forever going to haunt us, it's all in here. Nothing is out there. Everything is within consciousness. So that's the first very, very, very important change of vocabulary that we have to begin.
I would agree with that.
Then it is true that something appears to be out there. What appears to be out there is our material experiences. Why does it appear to be out there? Quantum physics has a very good explanation. For material stuff, material objects, they move in possibility when they become macroscopic and heavy. They move in possibility very sluggishly. And therefore, whenever we collapse them into actuality, we collapse them very close to where they were before. The tables and chairs, when you are not looking at them, their center of mass really shifts a little bit. Laser measurements have verified that. So quantum physics is always valid. But the quantum movements, when you are not looking, are so small that whenever we look, they appear to be at the same place. And because they appear to be at the same place, and you and I independently have the same experience, we say that they must be out there, outside of ourselves. This creates the most pervasive illusion in our thinking about the world, that there is something actually out there. There isn't. When we are not looking, there is nothing out there. When we are looking, something appears to be out there and not in here, but it is only a problem of how the world was built. Something needs to have a little bit of that quality out there, objective, because otherwise there would be no reference point. Without reference point and without something rather static or not moving so fast, we could not represent those things which do move quite fast, like our thoughts, like our feelings.
Right. Now, I mean, you may be talking to one of the few people who's actually might be more radical than you are, just so you know that you're in good company. but you know, I can't help but think that when we start going down this road, and you again, you know this better than I do, when we start going down this road, it starts sounding a lot like Hinduism and Maya. I happen to think that Hinduism has a lot of truth in it.
What will help, Philip, is to also point out, though, at this very point, that it's not only Hindus that have talked about this. The esoteric traditions of all religions, including Christianity, but like, you know, my favorite is always to quote Jesus. In Jesus' statements, you can find statements like Hindus all the time. So it's not that Hindus serve one form of truth and Christians see another form of truth. It's not like that at all.
Right.
That, of course, is what gives us these dogmas. But the esoteric traditions of all religions at some point or other have recognized that there is really this one reality based on consciousness. In Christianity, we call it Godhead. In Hinduism, it's called Brahman. In Judaism, in Kabbalah, it's called Ein Sof. But whatever way you call it, all religions fundamentally in their esoteric traditions agreed that very few people understand the esoteric traditions and therefore they had never have been very popular, but it exists in all cultures. That is important to point out.
Right. And where I'm going with this, and I think you know where I'm going with this, is that in Hinduism, and I would agree other esoteric religions, but using Hinduism as an example, The term Maya, and if I'm pronouncing it correctly, is part and parcel of Hinduism. Maya being the illusion, the world itself is an illusion, and what is truly real is the inner self, is the ground of being, and so my criticism of Hinduism, by the way, and I don't know if it's a criticism or an observation, is that I think that is correct, but I also think the human body is an illusion, and therefore the illusions cancel out, and therefore the world is real.
Let me put it slightly differently, if I may. The Hindus were stretching. You see, this is what is a common problem with our makeup, the human mechanism. The common problem is that what we don't understand, we denigrate. So So the materialists don't understand consciousness. They denigrate it as epiphenomenon of the brain. So similarly, the Hindus at those times did not have any idea how to explain the phenomena of the world. They didn't have science. They didn't have ways to measure things.
Right.
So they denigrated it completely. They could measure internal aspects very easily. They were experts on how thoughts go, how meaning is processed. They theorized about all those things very, very well. They could not theorize about matter simply because they just did not have the experimental gadgets that you need in order to study matter, which came around only 400 years ago. So this is the reason that they denigrated the world, and words like Maya has been used in that culture, and look at what that culture got as a result. Because
right.
they denigrated the world, they are constantly taken over by other people who are more real, more realistic,
right.
and that is why their idealism has never been very successful, even in India. People don't really believe that the world is Maya because you cannot live that way. It
right.
is stupid.
Right.
So
right.
now, in the new science, we validate both the world and the transcendent, and the transcendent reality where possibilities reign. So you have to value both. Otherwise, you have to integrate both. This is the mistake we have been making. The spiritual traditions exclude the material traditions exclude spirit.
Right.
And this cannot give us a healthy appreciation of who we really are, so that we can solve our problems, we can take responsibility for our solutions. All this does not happen because we alienate, as you said. We separate. We separate the two. We become polarized. Republicans, Democrats. We become polarized. Scientists, spiritualists. We become polarized. We
right.
cannot operate anymore that way.
Right. And I want to now the first hour already is coming to a close, but I want to draw a connection now between the point you just made and a German idealist, Schelling, who has, and he has a couple phrases like Emerson does, but one of Schelling's phrases or observations is that nature is the mind made visible. Okay, now and I think to me that is a short way of solving this Hindu perspective or this problem with Hinduism, where you denigrate the outside world. To me, nature is, and we could use the word consciousness, is consciousness made visible, and therefore,
Absolutely.
They're the same thing. They're the
Absolutely.
Same. It's the same thing, and so you can't, just like the materialist can't denigrate spirit or consciousness without denigrating themselves.
And
so,
the beauty of
right.
the new paradigm of science is that today we can actually explain Schelling's statement. We can actually show how this happens. And when we do that, we can actually provide experiments in the laboratory that proves that our explanation is correct. And this is why I make the claim that scientific evidence for the existence of God is already there.
Right.
So what are you going to do about it?
Right.
And
right. So in sum, we've left a lot of topics for next week's show because we've barely scratched the surface. But I hope that that the listener understands what's going on here, and that is there are people out there like Dr. Goswami that recognizes that there is this internal conflict in our modern mindset, that we are not reflecting the truth and the findings of quantum theory in the way we look at the world, and therefore we have this internal discomfort or this alienation. And the future can only bring us a progression towards a more all-encompassing worldview that brings together spirit and science. Now, Doctor, I'd like to thank you for your time, and we are going to go at this again next week, and we're probably going to wrap up a couple of the topics that we kept open. We never got to non-locality, which is a whole nother interesting topic we're going to have to get into a little bit, and then I want to talk next week a little bit about evolution. So Doctor, if you have any final comments, go go ahead and make them. But we're going to have to save some of this to next week's show.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Philip, for this very wonderful discourse. I hope the listener has liked it and appreciated it. But I will say this in continuation of what I was saying about this, what can we do about the fact that we have proven now, experimentally and theoretically, that yes, there is consciousness. There is consciousness as a causal entity. Yes, we have free will. We have choice. And we can therefore take responsibility for our choice. So what kind of world do we want to build? We have a whole new paradigm waiting for you to explore and develop. It is not the product of one scientist's mind or two scientists' mind. It is the product of which resembles truth the best we can at this time of our evolution. And we need for you to think about it, for you to join in, especially about what kind of world do you want to build.
Yes, and that is that's a very good way to end, and I want to emphasize what Dr. Goswami is saying, which is that it's up to all of us to question the media, to question the material scientists, and move our world towards a more idealistic consciousness first, mind first perspective, because that it looks like that's going to be the way we're going to have to move in order to truly improve the state of affairs on our little planet Earth. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
You've been listening to Conversations Beyond Science and Religion with Philip Meriton. To find out more about Philip and his new book, The Heaven at the End of Science, visit heavenattheendofscience.com.